Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today I'm in conversation with Leonard Tatenda Goodwill Muyambo, the founder and team lead at Paltech and Power Africa Labs. If you enjoy this conversation, please remember to subscribe, to like, and share. Let's get down to some work. Years later, we then got into the Portras hackathon, which is the innovation drive. And they said, no, look, this is a great product. And we got number one prize out of 600 participants. And one thing I've learned about our state-owned institution, we have really good technocrats in there. People who really have what they do at heart. 2022, I actually went back home to Mutare, to my mother's couch. Leonard Tatenda Goodwill Muyambo, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
No, thank you, Trevor. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to be talking to a young man like you who is doing amazing things. A lot of people ask me, so who do you sit down with? And I say, I respect that chair. And I want people to sit before me and have a conversation. People who've done stuff. People who've created things. Not talkers. Or people who write about stuff, things that they don't know. So you've actually done things. But before we go there, Leonard, I thought I should ask, why so many names? Leonard Tatenda Goodwill? Yeah. What's the story behind the many names?
So before I even take you there, I actually want to thank you. I was reminding Rob in the background that I was here at some point. And yeah. I was in the background.
Really?
You interviewed one of my mentors. So you brought me to the conversation. I'll tell you later who it was.
Wow, well, now I'm embarrassed.
No, Rob couldn't even remember. Yeah, I think it's the weight. Okay. Before then, I was not married. Okay, so okay. I think the wife did a good job.
Oh, well done.
Facelift.
Okay.
So yeah, you say something really interesting. So it was my first line. I was like, I want to remind Trevor and thank you for that. After the conversation, my mentor came and introduced me. It's like, this is a young man, you know, he went to Cornell, he did this, he's doing this, and he's joined me in my company to see what we can do. And we thought the conversation was going to be like, oh, let's have tea and no more. But you say something that really stayed with me, and that helped me. Because at that time, I was transitioning. I had failed in my first startup, so I joined the company to rejuvenate myself. And then you said, Leo, I want you to do one thing. Stay at this man's feet and learn as much as you can. And I was indecisive at that point because I was 3 months in and I was thinking, should I stay? Did I betray myself? What did I do? And you said, look, if you're going to take anything away, I respect this young man and you're so privileged to be having these conversations and being able to work with him. And I went in the car after we left. I'm like, okay, Trevor, just put the nail in the coffin. I'm staying. So really,
wow.
I know the ex doesn't remember, but it's the tree that really sprouted something out of it. That I always say, okay, well, that day I met Trevor, you know, you poured out. It was not long. It was short, brief, precise. Because you saw it. And oh my God, did I learn. All these things that you're seeing now. It's as a result of having been part of that mentor's
life. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. God bless you. And so the names, why so many names?
So my grandfather was so excited that I'm the first grandson. And my mom was thankful. So Leonard comes from my grandfather. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm going to name this one. Yeah. That was my grandfather's favorite. I might be biased.
Yeah.
And my mom, I was born at 8 months. So he was quite thankful because we all thought I was not going to make it. So Tatenda is, you know, we are thankful. My dad, which is, it's a bit corny, but it's interesting. He got to tell me later in life where goodwill comes from.
Yeah.
So it's a verse in Luke where Jesus is born. So the scripture says, goodwill unto men for his son has been born. This says, look, for me, I went into the Bible. I looked at the scripture. In that scripture, because to me, a son had been born I just had to say, you know, goodwill unto men.
Wow.
So the three names are sort of
beautiful names, beautiful names. So you like we said when I made the introduction, you are the founder and team lead at Powertech and Power Africa Labs. What do you do? What do those two entities do?
Okay. So what came first was Power Africa Labs.
Yeah.
So Power Africa Labs, we started it first to answer urban design questions.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reinvent cities? So as I traveled, I realized labs were a thing. And I'm also a scientist by background.
Mm.
So I'm obsessed with experimentation.
Mm.
So labs are these hubs that are actually supposed to be run by government and cities. They come in to take a holistic approach to Harare or Mutare and say, okay, this is what we're facing. We've got Vision 2030, mm. we've got Vision 2040, 2065. Mm. How do we solve urban problems, housing? How do we solve the water crisis in a holistic approach? So we're so ambitious at that point because we're like, okay, we really think smart cities are going to be the anchor to solving all these urban challenges, particularly in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
So Power Africa Labs have started to answer, you know, the crisis with urban cities, particularly using digital technologies to sort of like advance the productivity of cities. And then as we prototyped, we saw that we couldn't do it. It wasn't our mandate, right? We took up a job that we could not accomplish because it was so big. And it's the role of government that was supposed to step in and support the lab, actually. So say, okay, let's take the products that we have created out of Power Africa and launch them so that we can actually become profitable.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So Power Africa Labs, I have actually transferred it to my wife because we have some sort of like a similar background.
Okay.
So she's now running the lab in the same way we used to run it, but morely on the sustainable building side and green buildings and urban development.
So you say you had created products and at Power Labs. To take us through some of the products that you've created, the four ones that failed and the ones that succeeded, what products did you create?
So one of the interesting one was with urban mobility.
Mm-hmm.
We came in and said, look, the entry point to smart cities is smart mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so obsessed to see how we can solve the informal public transport system, which is IPT. So we took a step back and said, okay, how do we digitize?
Yeah.
How do we come along and then improve the chaos?
Yeah.
Because as much as it is chaos, it's innovation, right? As much when we go back to the transition from, you know, mass transit, the well-labeled ZUPCOs that, you know, had really good systems and forward talking into ESAP and how it promoted informal public transport, what you find is very interesting. IPT was fed into the African psyche that was, we are not always on time.
Informal public transport, IPT. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It fed into the psyche of people not always being on time. Mm-hmm. So there was no way a scheduled bus was going to work like it works in London. Because someone comes to a meeting, you know, 30 minutes late and whatever. And this is why combis are popular. They don't have a schedule. They're in oversupply. And you can catch it at any point you want.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, we're having discussion. And I remember when I came to Harare, we then talked to VIA. Because at that point, VIA was doing well as a ride-hailing mobility platform. It's like, okay, we've got this product. And it's to the graces of the former CEO, Dorothy Zemoto.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Leo, I like what you're doing. I want to buy off whatever you have done into VIA. And she took us on a journey to collaborate with VIA. And we did introduce some interesting products with them. So that's one in mobility.
Mm-hmm.
We worked mostly primarily with VIA from Econet.
Yeah.
And then the second
is one, VIA still happening now?
It's still there. But I think I was a bit disappointed.
Because there's, what is it?
The InDrive.
There's InDrive, which seems to have taken over
exactly
the market.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. You mentioned that. I need to take you somewhere where I was actually having a serendipitous moment. When we did the project with VIA and Dorothy, I was reading a book by Professor Mbiti, the late John Mbiti. It was African Religion and Philosophy. So I was trying to make sense of the product and service we're trying to offer VIA.
Mm.
And earlier I told you about the time concept of the African man.
Yeah.
So Professor Mbiti goes on to say, you know, in the African culture, time is not chronological. It's about events. So, Zuva Raka Chekanika, you know, that's midday. we don't say 12 o'clock, Mayenza, if you're a Samanyika like me, to describe time, we use events. And what was interesting was like the notoriously aspect of Africans being late is because to them, has the event happened? Not about, you know, it's going to happen at 9 o'clock. So did my conversation with Trevor happen? You know, I'm going to show up at the time of the conversation. So I was like, okay, Eureka, this is interesting. How does time relate with the combis? So I had a moment that was very unexpected. And I was like, okay, let's look at what happened to the public transport system. It failed because I think personally, beyond ESAP, it failed because it was not culturally fit for the urbanization that was happening. That's why you see a lot of informal public transport was popular back then in Harare. And we started studying the patterns. So what we saw is that combis are actually in oversupply for their routes. I was like, okay, that's interesting. If they're in oversupply, why is it that one route has got so many combis and there are so many number of people and commutes? It's because a person needs to know that the combi has to always be there at any given point that they need it. So ride hailing automatically has solved that problem. So it shouldn't be a challenge that smart mobility can become widespread. So we said to Dorothy, you know what? What's interesting is you are solving a problem that's already being solved by IPT. But the biggest challenge that we face with ride hailing right now is the price. So how do we make it affordable? The same solution in Drive uses, the same solution as I just said before.
Okay.
Which for me was, wish we could have just been bullish about it. It could have succeeded.
So urban mobility is one product. Yes. And any other products?
So the second product is the PAL Smart Bench.
Okay.
So the Smart Bench was designed to sort of like create spaces where it can digitally connect people and making access to the internet ubiquitous. But ever since then, we came up with the product, a lot of things had changed. So it's like, okay, if we created this hub that can connect people, how can we put AI into it?
Yeah, right.
So we then started experimenting by putting, you know, edge compute. If this is your Raspberry Pis, your Jetson Nano. So this
you've now lost me. I mean, so the fascinating thing, really, not the other fascinating, your smart park gets recognized by the Swedes, and you actually go and showcase it during the Swedish National Day. That's an embarrassment for us as a people. We should have been the ones embracing what you're doing, AI, smart bench technology, innovation, and that kind of stuff. Talk to me before we go to the bench, how the fact that we as Zimbabweans, we as businessmen, as entrepreneurs in Zimbabwe, as your government, as local government, have not embraced this idea of yours. And the Swedes see it and they showcase it at their National Day. How does that deal with you?
So it was painful in the beginning, before we got funding. So I think when we started, we wanted to beautify Mutare using technology. And it's a battle that hits hard,
yeah,
personally, because you freshly out of university, you're minted with ideas. You go to your local authority, guys, we can change the landscape. And to be fair to the government, institutions have been welcome. So we almost got investment from Taiwan and IDBZ, credit to Mr. Sakala. He was the first person to give me an audience. It's like, look, Leo, we want to invest. But first, get a commitment from your local authority. And that commitment never came. It was only a few years
later. This is Mutare. Mutare never came.
Never came
on board.
Yeah. And a few years later, we then got into the Portras hackathon, which is the innovation drive. And they said, no, look, this is a great product. And we got number one prize out of 600 participants. And I think it was
Thank you, Robert.
It was that commitment, I think, working with Portras, that showed me that, you know, as much as Mutare said no, I should not.
Did Mutare say no?
Oh, yes.
You went to see them?
Oh, yes.
And what did they say?
So I think for me, without projecting, a lot of it was, who is Leo? You know, I didn't have any backing. All I had was the idea and the drive to actually make it, you know, work to show them. At some point, I actually thought, you know, they would see me every day at their offices. And I would say, guys, how far are we with the proposal? because I read the JV Act. I knew at that point what an unsolicited bid was. And I put in as an unsolicited bid. And I was like, guys, this, we already have a commitment from these guys. But at that point, I think, I don't know. I hope you're honest with me. I don't know why they say no.
We'll take a break here, Leo, and come back at home. Don't go away. When we come back, I want us to go to unpacking the smart bench and the smart park idea, which Mtare City Council, you know, declined to participate in. So at home, don't go away. When we come back, we go to unpack the smart park and the smart bench idea. See you on the other side.
In moments where you feel like the task is huge, always look around your pocket. There's something that is going to work in your favor.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor and Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor and Associates. We help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor and Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor and Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Leo Leonard Tatenda Goodwill Muyambo, where we're discussing fascinating AI technology innovation. But before we get into the conversation, I want to remind you that if you are enjoying this conversation, remember to subscribe, to like and share. We are currently sitting on 95,000 subscribers and over, and 12.5 million views. Our audience is global. Our audience is quality. It is engaged. So stay tuned. So you, Mtare turns you away on the smart bench idea and the smart pot idea. Unpack to us what a smart pot is. This is a mouthful. Smart pack and the smart bench. What is this all about?
All right. So the smart pack idea came as a result of the hotspots that were widespread. I remember 2016, 2017, you see a lot of young people sitting outside, hotspotting Wi-Fi. So I thought to myself, because a lot of the service providers, the internet service provider, ISPs that were providing this service, were primarily Zoho, Tel One. So the guys would hub themselves at their corporate offices. So you'd see them sitting on the pavement. I'm like, there should be a better way where we can deploy accessible internet. So I went to the most sensible thing. We have parks. You know, you go to Harare, there's Harare Gardens in Africa Unity Square. You come to Mutare, there's Alloy Gardens and Mikos Park. And it's in every city. That structure is the same. So there's an urban central park, then there's a major big park. And I was like, why can't we just take the parks to be smart, right? Let's put technology in the park so that people can have accessibility within those confines. So it was straightforward, you know, let's put internet, let's put solar panels and design it. So got about a few designers and a team, created a team and designed this smart park. And the idea was we start with Mutare first. Yeah. You know, we send in a proposal to say, okay, this is going to be a smart park. And yeah, as I said earlier, that.
And Mutare is because I'm a Mutare boy.
Yes, yes. And you know what? I was so sentimental because in the Mikos Park, my dad used to take us for Christmas. We used to see there was this really good umbrella Christmas lighting that was there. So my dad used to take me there as young as 4 or 5 years old. And those were my fondest memories of those that park. So we used to see it and I would ask my dad silly questions about the universe. So from that point, I then thought, look, I could do something about this, you know. And it was until it felt one of my team members actually said, no, there's a bench in the park that we designed. Why not make that bench a product? Mm-hmm. And credit to him, we then said, look, this is actually a good idea. Instead of looking at the holistic part of the parks, let's take the bench and start to prototyping. And then that's when Portraits came in. So the bench was just a product in the park. Mm-hmm. So the park had the benches, it had smart IoT sensors.
What's the bench? What's in the bench?
Okay,
talk to us about the technology that's in the bench.
So the bench has got solar panels, and then it has your internet connectivity. And then that third layer, which is the AI connectivity. So everything, you can charge your phones, you can then hotspot, you know, connect to the internet, etc. So with that, we then imagine it as a hub. So it's a sitting space.
Yeah.
It can be a hub for anything. So we layered it with AI. What else can we layer?
Mm-hmm.
Sensors. It can tell you what the environment is in the terms of climate change, what the environment performance is, etc. And it can gather data in different parameters of urban development. So that's the bench. So it's just a simple design where we then get to add different things. So take your bench, add a solar panel, add internet, and then add AI to it.
You managed to secure funding for it in 2024. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that. Where did you get the funding from, and what are we talking about? How much money is this, and what do you do with it?
So we actually got the funding. We won in 2022. It was $50,000. And what we did was, I remember I was frustrated with Portraits. Like, why are you not giving us the money? We need to prototype. And they say to us, guys, in credit to them, because they had given us our contracts pegged at a CPI index. And I remember that time, if you remember very well, the CPI then went the other side. So any contract that was pegged on a CPI meant that the value was lost. So I went to see Mr. Mujuru and his team. And he said, Leo, please be patient with me. And one thing I've learned about our state-owned institution, we are really good technocrats in there. People who really have what they do at heart. And he said, I'm doing two things. I'm trying to change your contracts. It's going to take time. And I'm also going to bring in a new team because they were not capacitated enough. Remember, these were over 600 participants and everyone was supposed to get a share from the streamlined winners, which was a lot of contracts. And it gave me, because the engagement allowed me to have patience with them. They're like, okay. So I remember the second time I went, I was like in 2020, I was like, guys, it's been a year now. What's going on? He's like, okay, Leo. Funny enough, the day.
That's a long time to wait. You are a young man. You don't have another source of income. You are waiting for some inflows to come in, and it takes a year. That must take a toll on you.
If you want me to cry on camera, ask that period of time. I lost.
I don't want you to cry, but I want you to take us there. What take us through that journey, because it's a journey that a lot of entrepreneurs experience. That young man behind the camera right now is experiencing it. All these guys, you know, they've got brilliant ideas, but there are no takers out there, and you wait for a long time. Your pockets develop holes, and you can't feed yourself. Take us to that place.
2022, I lost everything, right? Because the subsistence was from Power Africa. So we still kept designing, you know, project for people. Mm. And we got into a bad deal and we lost everything. I think we had made a bit of money from designing these smart cities for people with huge amounts of land. So they would come in, they would subcontract us, we'll design the whole development with the 700,000 units and create all our ideas in that pocket. So we'd done it with a group of diaspora guys that had really good projects. And we had sort of like invested in this as our source of income as we wait for these big ideas to sprout. And 2022, I actually went back home to Mutare, to my mother's couch. And credit to my parents, Trevor, the first time, it's the second time I actually saw the kindness of parenting. We would joke around that I'm a returning citizen without anything to declare. But they said, look, come back. Let's figure this out. And my dad came back. He was at school. He said, okay, let's take a walk. And he said, Leo, I want to explain life to you. Right now, you are at your worst and you're trying to fight. Stop. Just calm down. At that time, he said, he gave me a scenario. Like, imagine you're in a fight. And then you're being butchered heavily. And you're being embarrassed because you're like, okay, I thought I was winning this fight. Mm. At that time, you need to tell the opponent that I'm done. You've won. And take a break. Because your ego, if it pushes you to keep throwing punches, you're going to want to try and throw a lethal punch that you will never have. Because as you're trying to defeat him, you're not defeating him. You're saying, okay, if I could just punch Trevor on the nose, he might bleed and people might not see I didn't suffer that heavy blow. Said, Leo, we made this house for you. It's not, we're not rich. We are living in the ghetto. But this house is for you guys to come and recoup, regenerate, and restart. So at that time, I found that comfort because I had to go back, and credit to my parents. I had that privilege of parents that were kind enough to say, you know, you can come back and restart. And looking back, I then got a call from the Swedish embassy. They said, look, Leo, we've got a program in Arusha. It was Sophia from the embassy that said, look, we've got a program from the embassy. You believed in me. I know you're down and out, but I just want you to go and participate in the program. It had nothing to do with what we're doing, but it's like, you need that. So I went there and guess who I met? One of your guests, actually, Dr. Kika Musa. Mm. So with Musa, we have a side conversation in Arusha. And I'm like, Musa, I don't understand what's going on here, but I'm more into construction and, you know, development of smart cities. It's like, we have a conversation, like, Leo, I like you. So Musa comes back to Zim. And when he comes back to Zim, he says something very interesting. He meets with Much's team, which had the because he was having an entrepreneurship, you know, training,
mentorship of
some sort. Yeah. And he says to Much, I want you to enroll this young man to Much's team. And I get a call from Much's team. They say, okay, what are you doing? Can you come for this program? I'm like, well, I don't have anything to do now. So they send me the program. And guess who I see?
Mm.
The mentor brother I told you about, Leslie Marange.
All right. Now I remember.
So I had met Leslie when I'd come when I came back from Sweden in 2019. And when I met Leslie, I said to Leslie, he knew he was just starting. And I took him around in business in terms of project finance because I understood it from the project that we're trying to build. Mm. And he said, Lee, I want you to be my CEO there and there. I want you to be Glidetime CEO. I was like, Leslie, not now. I'm trying to build my company as well. So I remembered that. And I said, okay, Leslie offered me a job once. Will he offer me this time? Because I need it. So it was the first time I ever got into employment at that point. I was never employed. And I was like, okay, Leslie trusted me at this point. So I went to the event with one target. Get Leslie to give you a job. So I see him. I'm like, Leslie, I'm here for you. I'm going to participate in the program. But the one person that, you know, we had great people that Much brought along. Mm. But my focus was laser sharpened on Leslie giving me a job. And then Leslie is like, okay, good thing we're about to get funding from Old Mutual. So we're in a transition period. We think you can handle. We want an innovation and investments manager. Can you come along? Mm. I'm like, oh, sure. Why not? And that night, after the mentorship, I didn't go back to Mutare. I actually went to Leslie's house and met the wife. And it's like, I'm going to get this guy to join my team. So to the young people that you say, never be ashamed to go back to the drawing board. This is a scripture.
To go back home and use the couch as your mom's couch as a bed. You're going to quote a scripture?
Yeah. You know, when God gave Moses the mandate to free the children of Israel, he asked him, what do you have? And in moments where you feel like the task is huge, always look around your pocket. There's something that is going to work in your favor. In that point, I realized that getting a job, I was not going to get it from, you know, your normal industries. Here I'm a biomedical scientist being offered an innovations job only because I had a relationship with Leslie. And the first time I met him, I wowed him. So I realized if this opportunity is going to work, I need to use what I have, my experience with him, and humble myself enough to offer myself for service. And be honest why I needed the job. It's like I'm told in what I've gone through that, no, it's fine. Let's do it. And this is why you saw me here, because he was taking me everywhere. It's like, I'm going to let you, because we had a deal. I was like, my deal is I'm going to work with you, but you're also going to give me time to rebuild my business back. And that was a great deal, because I would not have gotten that deal in normal employment. So we went on. He would help me on my side. I would help him on my side. I would get paid. And I would rebuild myself.
Are you now on your feet?
Yes. I got back on my feet a few years ago. I think at that time, things started making sense that I even got married.
Congratulations. Talk to us about how are you going to commercialize the smart bench and indeed the smart pot idea? Are you getting more councils, more local authorities interested? How are you going to roll out this idea?
So it's interesting. When we did the first project, we realized two things. The first thing was the bench was a hub of connecting us to the possibilities of AI. So the first commissioning we got with the Swedish Embassy was we needed to fine-tune the AI to be a diplomatic assistant. And we realized that not every customer is going to need the bench. On a B2B level, we could actually start using the hardware that we've built from the AI and put it anywhere. So our project is quite ambitious at the moment. We're working with a few clients. One of them is a school. I won't divulge much.
No, sure. Absolutely.
But what's interesting now is we are going to make sure that the hardware, because our expertise is on making sure that the AI, we understand the AI hardware. And we're going to use that AI hardware to plug in so I can put it in the classroom. Yeah. So the teacher can actually work with that AI. And we have also healthcare side of it. So our commercialization path is actually using the hardware that we now understand. And between this conversation, because I'm an alumni of a U.S. University, I then reached out to the American Embassy. And I said, look, we need to get in touch with NVIDIA, because NVIDIA, they are the best producers of compute. And me giving them pressure right now.
Yeah.
So they reached out. They were like, okay, Leo, we want to help. We're going to get in touch with NVIDIA. We're going to get you in touch with the U.S. Customs, because AI is highly regulated in the U.S.
Mm.
This is why you see the China trade war is on AI compute.
Yeah.
It's not in anything else.
Yeah.
So I think with them helping us as well, and also Potras helping us, it's quite incredible that they were forthcoming to help us actually access.
So you would the bench gets located in schools, the medicine part. Can you just explain the medicine part?
Okay, so we're not necessarily using the bench. We're just taking the hardware that works. So this is the compute. So we're just putting it, on a wall, maybe on a desk, and then it works as an agent, whatever we train it on. And then with the healthcare, it's the same thing. We give it as an assistant for nurses. So when they are unsure of a diagnosis, they can have a back and forth with, this impressive doctor that knows what it's doing. So it's now using the AI hardware with high compute and now putting it in different spaces. So when you find at Paltech Africa, our purpose is inspiring intelligent spaces for a better Africa. So spaces could be physical, could be digital. A space could be a bench. It could be an office. It could be a clinic. So we are putting AI in all those places to make sure that people have got high-speed compute and fine-tuned models right at their doorstep. They can actually relate with this, whatever they are working on.
Where is the monetization?
So the monetization is on renting.
Okay.
So we install it for you, then you rent it from us.
Okay.
So you pay installation fee, then there's a monthly subscription for us to maintain the model for training and also just making sure that it's working.
So what started as a smart bench in a park is now going into offices, boardrooms, and hospitals. Is that you what you're saying?
Exactly, perfectly. But take the boardrooms part.
Yeah.
Because our B2B model works very well. Imagine I'm going to AMH Media Holdings and I'm training it on all the data ever since you started. And it knows, by the time reports get to you, Trevor, they're fine-tuned.
Yeah.
I've got this experience because I know. So imagine you have access to a report from an intern and you can just ask the model, hey, I'm trying to get to know what's happening in marketing. It tells you, today we did this and this and this and this. So you don't need to wait for a monthly report.
Tell me, are you localizing these models? Are you coming up with our own models that will be good at Shona, good at Ndebele, good at Kalanga, good at the urban township lingo, the way we do things? Because for me, it appears that we are going to be importing AI instead of building AI models that are in tune with who we are, with our languages, our daily way of doing things. Are you going to be looking at that?
So you mentioned a very key part that we are actually working with Portras. So what we identified, because remember, we are good in hardware.
Yeah.
And the reason why we are getting a partnership introduction from NVIDIA is because we need the hardware. They've got the best
computer. Yeah.
So we don't need to build our model. So I'll give you an example. Let's take, for example, ChatGPT.
Yeah.
ChatGPT is a general purpose model. So it can answer anything, can do anything. But it's a model that works as a good template. So imagine a water coming from Morton Jeffries.
Yeah.
It's the processing. So that's ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And the access point is the what? It's the tap.
Mm-hmm.
The tap allows you to reduce the capacity.
Or increase. Yeah.
Exactly. But gives you something that is easily consumable.
Yeah.
But I can play around with Morton Jeffries. So what we do is we stake whatever we're building on an existing model.
Oh, I see.
Because it's available. So we call it fine tuning.
Okay.
So if I want to train it in Shona, it's just fine tuning the model to be able to be trained on any language. Like,
so are you actively working on that?
Always.
Because for me, that looks like, look, I'm totally ignorant of these things. That looks like the space that will become useful to some of us. I mean, for instance, when I'm doing research on Zimbabwe, whether I'm using Gemini, whether I'm using Cloudy or ChatGPT, there's always a gap in terms of, there's a knowledge gap between what ChatGPT knows and what I want. So at the end of the day, AI is as good a model as the training that it has been given. Are we doing that?
So definitely. Look, I'll give my investors pressure because they're the one that I was helping us here. They took us to different stakeholders in some. One of them is the USET, the High Performance Compute Center. And they've got the back layer that we will be using to install our high compute power. So we're already in discussion to see how we can, because what you need, Trevor, is compute.
Yeah.
And from any of this conversation, hardware is going to be the most important thing that we access. And I will say this, Zimbabwe has got actually good leverage to position itself to actually make sure that we get partnerships that are ideal in terms of compute. Guess what we have? We have lithium, right? And compute is going to need energy. So these partnerships for us, if we get good trade deals to get access to compute, then we can build. Right now, ChatGPT is now 1 million GPUs. So the GPUs are the central hardware to train these models. So if we don't have access to hardware, we can wishfully think that we can train. So for us, positioning is making sure that we get this leverage with the US embassy to help us get the compute power that we need so that the training can come along. Because training now, Trevor, with what AI can do is easy.
So what we need, correct me if I'm wrong, is the compute.
Exactly.
This is where the NVIDIA's come in.
Mm.
What we need is power.
Exactly.
That's reliable and dependable. What we need is the internet railroad, as it were, to get us to get us moving. We can all have all that, but for me, those are important. But the distinguishing factor is this layering that you're talking about.
Mm.
That makes this thing much more user-friendly to me. Did you get what I'm saying?
Yes. So once we get the resources to train, it's then a process of getting in all the stakeholders. Yeah. So you are in media. Imagine you have shown a publication that you have, all the interviews that you've done in Shona.
I'm in technology, by the way, and media is the output.
That's a good yeah. new proposition.
Okay. Right.
So you recently had a conversation with Ignatius.
Yes.
The famous guy that translated the Shona
yes,
Bible. So
yes.
those are the resources that we need
right.
to put into the
exactly.
to be
now you're talking train, my language.
To be able to train.
Right.
Because ideally the hub of the training is going to come from, you know, Shona Bible, all the interviews that we've done in Shona, in Kalanga, in Dao, Amendao, you know, all these things coming together.
For me, that's going to be the sweet spot if we can get that. Mm. Let me hold you there and we take a break. You, 2016, you enrolled with Eduvos to do biomedicine.
Yes.
Biomedicine and what you're talking about now, worlds apart. I'm going to want us to go to that space, you know, what makes you change from biomedicine to getting into what you're doing right now. And I think a lot of people would want to get to understand your upbringing. You've been to the Dutch Design Week in the Netherlands, and you've done some interesting things. So we'll take a break here. When we come back, we're going to go to that space and finding out why this bioscientist is getting into AI and other interesting spaces. So see you on the other side.
So the ideal ecosystem is that we don't have the right risk capital coming not from government, but the people that have created it.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor and Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor and Associates. We help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor and Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor and Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Leo Leonard Tatenda Goodwill Muyambo. I heard you before we took the break talking about investors. So you've managed to get some investors.
Yeah, locally, primarily the Portrait CSF Fund.
Okay. Yes. How is that? How has been that experience? I ask because one of my passions is how do we help young people like this, like you, in improving the startup ecosystem, the investment environment, the legislation that allows funders to be able to invest in what you're doing, the attitude of government and corporates in helping people such as yours. Talk to me about how it's been like trying to fundraise.
So one of the biggest challenges that I faced was, you mentioned a very good word, the ecosystem. Was confused Zimbabwean ecosystem with Silicon Valley ecosystem.
Right.
My background allows me to try to find things objectively and see what we're dealing with. We don't have a Silicon Valley ecosystem. We have a Zimbabwean ecosystem. So I want you to imagine the rainforest and the desert. If the rainforest tries to be the desert, it won't pass.
It won't happen.
Yeah. If the desert tries to be the rainforest, it won't succeed.
So what do we do? So what do we do?
So we use evolution, right? So going back to that analogy, the desert has got cactus. I love the cactus. The cactus has developed so much so to an extent that it survives its ash conditions, right? So the entrepreneurs that you're getting from Zimbabwe, they've got grit, they've got survival capabilities. So understand that in a desert, we can build Dubai, right? But it's inherently identifying the key resource within the desert without mirroring it with a $24 trillion economy.
But surely we can learn from what Silicon Valley has done without mimicking it. And I think sometimes some of the things that this desert environment teaches you, you don't need. I mean, so what do you guys need to get going? What has been your experience as far as that is concerned? What do you need in terms of an ideal ecosystem for you to get going?
So the ideal ecosystem is that we don't have the right risk capital coming not from government, but the people that have made it.
Yes.
So government shouldn't even be playing a role in funding. But because now there is no, because what government did, and this is also pressure to you, Trevor. I'll give you pressure in your class. We grew up reading about you, Trevor. We grew up reading about your peers, how you guys used to create these amazing products by coming together, whether it was project financing, acquiring companies. But that generation never came back to pick one. You find in Silicon Valley, the reason why it's successful, and I'll quote Bezos, who says this, is the ability to deploy risk capital in a scale that other nations can't do. And it's not a government doing that risk capital deployment. Government can only incentivize.
Sure.
So what we have lacked as a country is the Trevors that have made it and say, look, I'll put skin in the game to uproot the people that are coming up. Why don't we have a Trevor Venture Capital firm, right? Why don't we have Trevor and Associates having the right, you know, resources pulling? Because you've got the right goodwill. You can pull in the funding. But ideally that gap, because for me to move from ideation.
So it's risk capital that you need.
That we need.
What about the legislative environment? The hurdles that you come across in trying to set up your startups?
So in terms of legislative environment, I would say I can only face it if I want to do business with government,
okay,
which is normal. Bureaucracy is an animal in itself that invents to protect government, vice versa. But if I want to work independent of government, government doesn't have a say, right? The reason why I like my investor now is because they can give me the resources I want within. So you look at an investor, you say, okay, we're trying to build AI and then sovereign. So what can Portrait give me? Can give me access, right, to compute power, to different resources. So government can only be a challenge if you want government to be a client, which is why world over.
Yeah. But, you know, my idea, my thinking was, you know, America, the Silicon Valley is what it is because of the enabling environment that the American government has put in place that allows risk capital to operate and certain tax breaks and so forth. I think that's what I was talking about. Let's go to the space, Leonard, where you registered for biomedicine at Eduvos in the mid round. Where does the passion for biomedicine come from, and how far have you taken that?
So the dream was always to become a medical doctor, right?
Okay.
You're raised in a family, and it's like I was.
Where was the dream coming from?
I was always being called professor or doctor growing up.
Okay.
Because I was very inquisitive.
Okay.
And I think my parents really encouraged me for that learning passion. But medicine was sort of the default route if you had really good grades.
Yeah.
And growing up, I was really a good student, right? And that gave...
Where did you grow up? Where were you born? Mutare?
I was born in Mutare in Sakuba.
Right. Okay.
And then we then moved from Sakuba to Dangamvura.
Right.
So then most of my childhood spent it in Dangamvura. Up until my adult childhood.
Okay. Which schools did you go to?
So primary school, went to an incredible school that set up a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I love that school, Mutare Junior School.
Okay.
So Mutare Junior School for me was the basic foundation that really taught us in anything that we could be in the world was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And in high school, people always ask me this, and I cringe answering it because I feel like people make assumptions. So I went to Marange High School.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Hillcrest College. I went to Hadzo.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Mutare Boyza. Okay. So the next question is what? Right. So it's reflective of my life. Being raised by a pastor, we used to move a lot.
All right.
Methodist All church. Right. We used to move in
the yeah, pastor's son.
Yes.
Okay. And which university did you go to?
So I then went to Eduvos.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you finish your medicine?
Yes, I did finish my biomedical
degree. What which to talk to us about the components of that degree.
So what biomedicine did, it gave me the critical thinking edge. So really incredible lecturers that I had that encouraged critical thinking. So one of my favorite modules when I started was scientific research and thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it teaches you that as a scientist, what is the default thing? It's objectivity.
Yeah.
And you should be able to question your own assumptions.
Mm.
Right. So that allowed me to tap into the power of understanding the world from an objective sense and not try to project what I want the world to be. Right.
So, but you've now moved from biomedicine to what you're doing now.
Mm.
What's been the push-pull factors into the decisions that you've taken?
So I'll blame it on Cornell University.
Aha.
Yeah.
Right.
So in my final year, Cornell University comes to Zimbabwe, to Midrand.
Midrand.
Yeah. It pulls in all these local universities, Wits, UJ, and our university, these postgrads, undergrads. They having a training on critical thinking, argumentation, and debate. And I just sprung out to be a natural, right? Because of the scientific approach.
You give me an argument, I can frame it.
So Cornell said, come teach. You went to teach at Cornell?
Yes.
How long was that?
So I taught during the summer school,
okay,
which is a month in Cornell.
Okay.
So they would bring kids from all over the world, and then you would teach during that summer school. So what was incredible is then I then asked myself, if critical thinking is a thing, right, how can it help me? Because right? I was the kids I was teaching, they were paying $4,500 a week to be at the summer camp.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, okay.
What were you teaching?
I was teaching critical thinking.
Critical.
So argumentation.
Right.
How do you frame arguments in an objective way? How do you frame in a debate? How do you have dialogue with creating the right arguments objectively? So I then went deeper and started researching more and more and more. And what's this resources that I've recently acquired and how can it help me?
Mm.
So you find that when I was at Glide Time Foods, one of my biggest success stories and what I'm proud of is I introduced two things. So I got in the business and I was given a problem.
Mm.
And the problem was, Leo, modern retail is killing us. The stories of, okay, not paying in time, and business was heavily dependent on modern retail, and the market is informalized.
Mm.
So the question was, how do we tap into the informal sector? And if you look at the range that Glytime was selling, is high-end sort of like products. So they are hard to put on the street.
Yeah.
So I came up with two models. One of the model was, how can we create a vendor in the corporate? So I created the corporate vendor model. Someone from Trevor's office, a secretary, is having a side hustle now. And Trevor eats the product.
Mm.
So if we can give that person the product and they can sell to Trevor.
Mm.
But what does that person need? They need empowerment. What they need is to hear, these are the people that log in onto your show and listen to what success looks like. So I'm like, Leslie, you are the product. We're going to have every end of month a session where you talk to these young people that are aspiring. But to join, you have to come with $50, get the products and sell. Mm. So we called it the SME Empowerment Program.
Mm.
So I think it layered my approach to, you know, being raised in a system where we need to support. So you find most of my program in Lighttime are always empowerment programs.
All right.
And also the idea, how do we give back as we help people? Mm. So we started getting US dollar because these were cash basis. And the business improved in terms of the informal sector. And then the second layer, one which I'm really, really proud of, was we then said, okay, if we can do that, how do we also take the product to the customer and they can have an experience with right there and there?
Mm.
And then we created Lighttime on the go. Like if you've been to Mars,
yes,
you have seen it. And kudos to Leslie. Everything that I would come up with, he would allow me to get in, tap into, and do the most I would. So he gave me the string to work with. And he was a very good executor.
Mm.
So what you find is that when I was there, it's like, okay, let's walk through the idea. Let's do it.
Mm.
And I think on a revenue basis, Lighttime and the Go has done really well in terms of the marathons and the events that they host. So that critical thinking ability, you give me a problem now, I'll turn it upside down and be able to sort of like augment to say, what do we really need? What's the case behind it?
So Leo, what is your entity, your company going to look like, let's say in the next 5-10 years, when you sit down for the next conversation in 5 to 10 years, what do you want it to look like?
So Paltech, with our purpose of inspiring, intelligent spaces for a better Africa, is we took the learnings from trying to make a park intelligent. And we say we can make any space intelligent. So Paltech in the next 5 years, hopefully we have a student teacher digital assistant. Mm. Remember back in the day, the education system would pair a senior teacher with a student teacher. Mm. So we would want to see a classroom that's paired with AI. So we could have at least 50% of the market share in 5 years, where we dominate how we deploy edge AI into institutions such as classes.
Right.
So we want a space where, you know, we're doing a study with teachers and they say, look, because I was trying to help them that AI is not going to replace you, because a teacher is not about the intellect that they hold.
Mm.
It's about the ability to reach the student. Right. Which I think a lot of the teachers didn't understand until we're talking to this school that we're doing a case study with, to say it's not really about AI coming in and taking a job. AI can't do your job. Your ability, you know, our best teachers, your best teacher that if you couldn't remember, is not the teacher who was the best at doing something, but who could reach to you, Trevor.
So what is it that you need to get to that vision of having 50% of market share? What would be the building blocks of that vision?
So we mostly like people who want to join the team.
Okay.
Who are not afraid to fail.
Okay.
People who can come and augment our partner portraits and say, look, we are going to create sovereign AI for Zimbabwe in healthcare and education.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are going to be deploying this in institutions. So we are looking for partners that are willing to help accelerate that speed.
Mm. So, yeah. So in your short space as an entrepreneur, as an innovator, what has life taught you in a nutshell? What has life taught you about you and being in business?
What matters?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, my wife and my daughter are my top priority.
Mm-hmm.
I think with time, you realize what matters. You know, yes, I want to, but the ideas to build, I want to build. But when you go home, are they the primary responsibility of whatever you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think after failing and succeeding a bit, it taught me that at the end of the day, there are people that are always going to be waiting for you.
Mm.
And you need to invest in those people. Like when I went back home, I hadn't been doing a good job in making sure that I was always in touch with my parents. It only realized that they needed you. And they always would need you, you know, and they are always going to be there for you.
Mm.
So what matters to me is relationships. I really, really, really love relationships.
You've already had a startup that failed, isn't it?
Yes.
What did that teach you?
So one of the greatest lessons is it taught me about me, you know, what role did I play in the failing of the startup, and what role, you know, beyond saying, oh, it's the economy, you know, there's always going to be the economy. There's always going to be someone who's going to be, you know, an influencer, but what role did I play as Leo?
That's a very important one. That.
Yeah, it had to. It came from therapy. My therapist really helped me sort of like hone into that.
So you do therapy?
Yeah, I do. I encourage it.
Yeah,
it helps.
It's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the most primary things that I realize is that you are your greatest enemy, right? And when things fail, it's easy to abdicate responsibility and say, oh, if it wasn't for this, which really helped us on our disbursement. We got our funding in Zig, and it was easy to say, we can't do anything because it's local currency. And I remember the quickest thing I did was to call a banker, a compliance banker. I was like, look, we are going to buy a lot of our things in USD and some of them in local, but what do I do? Because I realized that it was easy to say, okay, the currency is not enough. We couldn't build. Like, okay, there are two things you can do, Leo. Go to the market and pre-order all your stuff that you need in local currency. And the rest come to the auction system and deploy. Because I knew there should be a solution. Otherwise, I would sit on this investment and say, oh, we couldn't do anything because it didn't make sense.
Until the investment was worthless.
Yeah, exactly.
Leo, you like I said, I love talking to young people like you who are really involved in the grit, in the real job of doing things, not binga. Building products, creating things, building organizations and institutions. So well done for what you're doing. This book, The Singularity Is Nearer, which follows this book, which I have not yet read, The Singularity Is Near. This is a great book. You know, I am self-taught in a lot of things. I taught myself journalism. I never went into a journalism school. I'm currently teaching myself AI. I wish I could teach myself to code, but that's not been possible. This is a great book in understanding when we merge with AI. So your biomedicine and all that kind of stuff. This is a great book that I recommend people get into and read. And The Singularity Is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology, is also a book I haven't read, but having read this, I think Ray Kurzweil is 20 years ahead of us, is 30 years ahead of us in terms of projecting what AI is going to do. The other book that I'm going to recommend, I've recommended this before, The Coming Wave. The Coming Wave is written by Mustafa Suleiman. I think Mustafa Suleiman is now with Microsoft in charge of their AI project. This book is AI, Power, and the 21st Century's Greatest Dilemma. It's a book that brings home the issue that AI is a double-edged sword. It's good and it's bad. How do we deal with the bad aspects of AI? It's exciting, but it's frightening. How can it be tempered? And it gets into the tough conversations about AI. So those are the three books that I thought I would recommend. What books are you going to recommend to our book-loving viewers? By the way, Nicole is going to add a link at the bottom of this video that will take you to our book club. We've got a WhatsApp group book club that's sitting at over 700 members. We are organizing our first get-together in September, where we're going to be reading and discussing Joe Matizzo's one of Joe Matizzo's books. So you make a point to click there, follow the details, and join us early in September when we gather to discuss Joe Matizzo's book. So we are on WhatsApp. The link is going to be there. What books are you recommending?
So the first one that I think sort of like sums my life and my approach to failure is Black Box Thinking by Matthew Syed.
Okay.
So Black Box Thinking, I really, really recommend this book for startup founders, entrepreneurs, SMEs,
right,
and people in leadership. What it talks about, it takes lessons from the aviation industry. You know, when a plane crashes, they take the black box. The reason why the aviation industry is the safest is it sort of like improves and you are safe to fly than you are on the road, is because they take the black box and learn.
The mistakes.
Exactly. So it's how do you learn from your mistakes, and how are you unafraid to face your mistakes?
Yeah.
You know, and that for me has always been my approach to life, like the inward thinking. Open up the black books, because you're the best black books, right? You know what you did wrong, mm-hmm. and you need to reinvent yourself mm-hmm. from that. So it then talks about the parallel that is the healthcare industry, how the healthcare is so disastrous mm-hmm. because failure is covered up.
Absolutely.
You know, mistakes of medical practitioners are not
buried.
Exactly.
What's your next book?
So the next book is Super Connect, mm-hmm. The Power of Networks and the Strength of Weak Links. So this book is incredible because it taught me how to network. It talks about this, you know, idea of weak links that I really like, mm. that I don't have to have a powerful relationship with you so that we can build networks. You could be so essential as a weak link. Mm. So not everyone needs to be in your inner circle.
Yeah.
You need to know where to put a person. Mm. And most of the people that have helped me are actually weak links. People that have had a conversation with me to tell them, like, oh, we like you. Like my embassy, my journey with the Swedish embassy has always been that weak link relationship. And then
the third one
would be one of my recent favorites. When I was about to leave my mentor and restart my journey, he said, if you could only improve one thing and be better at all of us, it would be execution. You have the ideas, you have the know-how, you are very good at transforming businesses, but improve on your execution. So I wanted to know what execution is about because I thought I had it.
Yeah.
So I encountered a book called The Four Disciplines of Execution.
Hmm.
Man, that book.
But written by who?
So I don't remember
the author. That's fine. I also forget authors. Yeah.
So, but Four Disciplines of Execution is amazing. So it talks about the discipline is focus. Mm-hmm. Then there is measuring what matters. Mm-hmm. And the third one is scoreboard, keeping mm-hmm. a scoreboard. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth one is cadence of accountability. For me, the first one was the most important. How do you focus on what matters? They call them the wildly important goals. Mm. So at most, you should have at least maximum two. Mm. Three, you're stretching it. So always pick two things that you can focus on in terms of the big goals. Mm. And then you can be able to execute better. So I think the four disciplines of execution actually maps out how you can actually be a good executor in terms of running a business or starting a business. Because what we fail on doing, which most of us do, is when we look at businesses, we always have 10,000 ideas.
Yeah.
So the person with the ability to say no to 9,999 is the most successful person.
Saying no is a power, eh?
Yes.
Wonderful.
It's a superpower.
Wow. Leah, you've said a couple of things that I like. You're seeing a therapist. Mm-hmm. That's a very good thing. You're working on yourself. Mm-hmm. That's very important. You know, I tell young people who say, oh, Zimbabwe is difficult. I want to go into the diaspora. And I'm saying, who are you taking to the diaspora?
Mm.
It's you.
It's powerful.
Have you worked on yourself? Mm. It doesn't matter where you go. For as long as you are broken, you are taking yourself there. Mm. They might have fast trains, but you're still messed up.
Mm.
So working on yourself is a very important thing. Leo, great talking to you.
That's great.
Wish you the very best with How Tech. Empower Africa Labs.
No, thank you.
As you create those connected spaces, I think it's AI. I'm excited mm-hmm. about that and layering our local knowledge to these models that we have so that they become useful to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. So well done for that.
No,
thank you for making the time to join us.
Thank you.
Allow me to turn over to our viewers who follow us every week. A lot of people asking us, why are we repeating? We're repeating because we realize we have lots of content. We actually want to use rebroadcast. We're rebroadcasting content that's sitting in our archives, and we think that you should watch that content. We still have lots of fresh content coming your way, so you have a lot of binging to do. Remember, we are out every Monday at 7 a.m. Central African time on YouTube. To ensure that you don't miss out on any of these quality conversations, I please urge you to subscribe, because when you subscribe, you'll get a notification every time we have a new episode. Then share, like. The algorithm likes you to share and like. We've created a website where all our content sits, for your viewing pleasure and also for your listening, the podcast, for you to listen as you are working in the garden, washing the car. Remember, we are on 12.5 million views. We are on 95,000 subscribers. Join us so that you part of that informed and engaged crowd. Until next time, cheers to you all.